Alright, sorry to have been away, I really am, but it's just a shame we can now make progress. I'm on sheet 21, we're on sheet 21, about 60 to go, so there's a long way to go in terms of understanding what's going on. What I want to talk about for the next four sheets, through 21 through 24, is the issue of multiple truth in Machlokas. And let's get a bit of a historical introduction to it as well. I gave out to as many people as I saw, but maybe a couple of people didn't get, I gave out a little timeline. You saw this? Who, just a couple of you didn't get? This little jobby here? Who didn't get?
I didn't get
it. Okay, it's not personal, it's just I didn't get to everybody. I just came around giving it to a few people. Who else did not get? You got one. Yeah, you got one. Maybe you got one. One of these. This new one from today. Okay, excellent. So, who didn't get one? Put your hand up in the air, please. Okay, fine. Okay, ladies, if you look at the sheet, we'll refer to the timeline in a little bit and see how that goes. Okay. What's going on with Machlokas? So there are three different types of machlokas on the sheet here today, and we'll see these develop next time when we take it to a more philosophical level and we look at the issue of why are there different types of machlokas and which one are we looking for the truth? What is the truth? Is the truth something objective? Is the truth something subjective? And we have to see how that works. Have a look, please, in source number one.
Why is there machloket on machloket?
Like that's also part of the nature of machloket, if you like. If you like, ki Ezra heichin levavoy lidrash es Torah Hashem. We see about Ezra that he had, we saw already this first paradigm shift, which we've talked about at length, which is the idea that when Ezra came back from Babel and he rejuvenated Torah, he introduced this idea of drosha, and the droshas really took up. You see, I brought you the pasuk here. He prepared himself lidrash es Torah Hashem. So you saw already at the beginning of the Second Temple period a very important shift from the First Temple. And we talked a lot about that, about Nevuah and about Chochmah and all of those things. That we talked about. But there's a second shift that happens in the middle of the Second Temple period. And that we haven't talked about yet until now. And now we have to deal with that. Have a look at source number two, please. This already is Pirkei Avos, you've seen it before, but I want you to focus a little bit more on the names and who the people are, and we can work out where they fit into the grand scheme of things. Moshe kibbutz Torah mit Sinai u'matzor li'Yoshua. So Moshe received Torah from Sinai and gave it to Yoshua. U'Yoshua le'Zekanim, and Yoshua to the Zekanim, u'Zekanim le'Nevi'im, the Zekanim to the Nevi'im, u'Nevi'im masruah to the following people. The Nevi'im handed it on to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, who we saw was the beginning of the Second Temple period, Ezra and the others. And then Shimon HaTzadik, who mishyarei Knesset HaGedolah. Shimon HaTzadik was at the end of the Knesset HaGedolah. And then we have the period of what we call the Zugos. First of all, it's Antigonus Ishsoichoi, who's one, who gets it from Shimon HaTzadik. And then we have these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pairs that we call the Zugos. If you look for a second on your sheet that I gave you out today, this timeline that I put together. Well, I didn't actually put this together. I found this somewhere. I can't find one now. Oh, here it is. You'll see very clearly on the front page that the Zugot appear down here in the, where it says Nasi and Avbed Din. This 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pairs of Zugot. So there was a division of powers between the Navi, the Avbasin and the Navi, and the Nasi, which is actually very interesting in and of itself. Maybe this division of powers is also something of an indication of something of a division in society, I'm not sure. What was the role of the Avbed Din? Who was the Av Bet Din? What was the Av Bet Din of? Which Bet Din? The Bet Din HaGadol. He was in charge of the Sanhedrin. Okay, and the Nasi, who was the Nasi?
The leader of the governor.
Like. No, the governor of the people, more of a political position. But the Av Bet Din and the Nasi, between them, were both Talmidei Chachamim, and they dealt with the people. So have a look at these Zugos. So going back to the sheet that we're on here, with the third, if you like, link in the chain, Yosi ben Yoezer is straight of a Yosi ben Yochanan is Yerushalayim. So we'll see these two Yosis coming up a lot here. In terms of timing, and this is what you have to understand, this corresponds to the time of Yehuda, HaMakabi, and the Chashmonaim. Okay, the Maccabim. The Maccabim really was exactly at this period. where the Hashmonaim took over. You all know the Hanukkah story. You all know that the Greeks, if you like, took over from the Persian Empire, and the Persian Empire was at the beginning of the Second Temple period. The Greeks took over, then there was a war against the Greeks, and the Hashmonaim established an independent Jewish state. But whereas politically that may have been a positive thing, religiously it was in many ways a negative thing. Because even though they got rid of the Greeks and all the issues that the Greeks represented, they introduced within to the Jewish people an incredibly strong internal machlokas. And we'll see that again and again and again and again coming through today's sheets and the following sheets.
But last minute, it wasn't like Bar Kokhba or both. It was very different. Like, they were Kohanim, they were...
First of all, they were Kohanim, which is one issue, because the Kohanim are not meant to also be the leaders of the Jewish people. There's meant to be a division of powers. Between, on the one hand, there's the Melech, there's the Kohen, there's the Sanhedrin, and there's the Navi. Now, Navi we didn't have anymore, because it was the Second Temple. But you had, if you like, a Kohen and a king in the same person, the Yanai HaMelech, which was a major problem, which we'll see in a minute how this works. So, and then there were the rabbis. So you had this clash then between the rabbis on the one hand, and the Kohen stroke Melech on the other hand, which became part of the Sadducees as well. The Tzedokim infiltrated very much the Kahuna, and they were very much part of that anti-Pirushim group of people. And you had this machlokas built. Let's just carry on looking
but
at these.
The Kohen was the king?
The Kohen for a while was the king. We'll see that right now. In number 4, he says, Yeshua ben Parachi and Nitha Arbeli. They were the next generation. Number 5, Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shatach. And then finally, Shammai v'Avtalion and Hillel and Shammai. I'm only giving you the names because I want you to recognize them. If you go out the room, I want you to recognize the names because we're going to see these names again and again in the coming sources, these Zugos all the way through. Now, first of all, let's start at the beginning of the Zugos. Says the Gemara in Sota, when Yosef ben Yoezer and Yosef ben Yehuda Ish Yerushalayim died, so something changed, something clicked, something happened. And again, this is the beginning of the if you like, the end of the honeymoon period of the Hashmonaim. Remember, the Hashmonaim were a very big success at the beginning, and Yehuda and Maccabee, and they discovered the Greeks, etc. So already in the next generation, everything began to come unraveled. Have a look at number 3. Mishemeis Yosef ben Yehuda ish Shreid of Yosef ben Yehuda ish Yerushalayim, batla ha-eshkolot. That was the end of the eshkolot. Now, what's an eshkol? In modern Hebrew, is a grapefruit, okay? But it wasn't the end of the grapefruit. It's still a word that is used in Eshkolot.
It's Isha
Kolbo. Isha Kolbo. I saw one of our local Rabbi in Hanov, Rabbi Feuerstein, who is the head of the Datsunim Mishul on the Chai side where we live. So his father died a few months ago. He was a very famous guy. He was called Professor Reuven Feuerstein. He founded a whole methodology of treating Down syndrome children. Very interesting guy. On his, you know, they put a death notice up with a black line around it, saying Baruch Dan Emes or whatever. So when he died, it said on the notice, Ish Eshkolot. I noticed, I thought of this tomorrow when I read that, Ish Eshkolot. In other words, they still use this word in Hebrew to mean somebody who is an all-rounder. Ish HaKolboi, but we'll see it in a minute. Bato Eshkolot, says the Gemara, my Eshkolot, Am Rabbi Yehuda ben Avraham Shmuel, Ish HaKolbo. There's something, there's some completeness, there's some holism? There's something holistic about this individual, which after they died, then no one else was able to, if you like, contain all of that together, and therefore you ended up with different aspects which led to machloket. Yes?
So how come it's the Hashmonaim, and internal struggle, how come we celebrate?
Well, we celebrate Hanukkah, but we sometimes don't realize quite how subtle the issue was. In other words, when we celebrate Hanukkah, it's often very clearly black and white.
No, I'm
here
because
I already
passed
by. So then sit down.
No, wash my hands.
So then go wash your hands. The Hanukkah story we sometimes present is very black and white. The Greeks are the bad guys. The Jews are the good guys. We beat them. Now we'll eat donuts. Okay, fine. It's much more complicated than that. In many ways, the Greeks were the good guys. What do I mean by the Greeks were the good guys? Because we celebrate a lot of what we think is Greek Chochmah. We integrated a lot into Judaism. We are very into the idea of Chochmah being a way to pursue the truth. And if you look at Rav Hirsch on Hanukkah, he says a lot of very positive things in that sense about the Greeks. On the other hand, the Jews, the Hashmonaim, were not clearly the good guys. Because in the next generation, the Hashmonaim became very much the bad guys. So Hanukkah is very oversimplified in many ways. Because there's much about Greece, a Sefer Torah can only be written in Hebrew or Greek. A Sefer Torah written entirely from beginning to end in Greek is a kosher Sefer Torah.
The Septuagint who said that?
No, not the Septuagint. That was a disaster. The Septuagint was very bad.
Only Hebrew or Greek? Let's
Hebrew or Greek?
But why Greek?
Why Greek?
Aramaic?
Why no? Aramaic is possible.
Why Greek?
The Septuagint was a translation, traditionally by 70 rabbis, of the Torah into Greek. That was a negative. That was negative. There were two translations about the Septuagint. Guys, no calling out, please. Put your hands up if you have something to say. Okay, keep it. So there were actually two different understandings of how this thing was translated. One of them was positive, one of them was negative, which I'm not getting into now. But the idea of something being in Greek and a Sefer Torah being in Greek is a very interesting one. Because the Greeks, there's a lot of positivity to Greek, as well as all the negativity that comes with the story. Anyway, so what does this mean, Shakoba? Let's look at number four for a second. Says Rashi, what does it mean that they had everything? Torah ba'amitah, why don't you look at the words carefully. Torah ba'amita, what does that mean?
Torah
in its true essence. The ain, and there isn't in these three things. What are these things? Doithi, what's doithi?
That's doubt.
Not doubt. What's doithi?
Doubt.
Dibarnu doithi. Remember from the Shamnu Bagadnu? Like a blemish, or doithi means literally two mouths. Hypocrisy. Okay? We said one thing, we thought another. Dupi, dual, like. Pair. The shichacha, there wasn't shichacha, what's shichacha? There wasn't forgetting. Okay, umachlokes. So Rashi already introduces you to the idea that from this generation of Yosef ben Yehuda and Yosef, what's his name? What's the second fellow? Yosef ben Yehuda, it's Yerushalayim. There was already the beginning of machlokes, shichacha, and some kind of hypocrisy. What's that? Who was he? He was the one of the zugos in this generation. No, two different people. No, one second. Yosef ben Yehuda is Shreda, and Yosef ben Yochanan is Yerushalayim.
Where
does it say Yosef ben Yehuda? Yosef ben Yehuda. Interesting, must be a different Gersalt as to what his father's name was. It's the same fellow, yes.
I'm very confused as to when this period of
Noah's book. Up until... Guys, can everyone start getting up again? You are the last person. No one else is getting up, because I can't... It just becomes uncontrollable, okay? From this generation, which is basically we're talking around the year 200, 150 BCE.
So between
during in the middle of the Second Temple period, towards the second half of the Second Temple period.
Does that mean that before this period there was machlokes?
Oh, so we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about that. There was always machlokes. The question is, what kind of machlokes? That's what we're going to talk about in a minute.
This one is happening between 200.
Yeah, so the end of the Second Temple period, something starts, which is problematic, which is this Doithi Shicha Machlokes. Have a look at number five. Number five is from Gemara in Tzemura, which expresses the same idea. Mishemeis Talan Hassel. Mishemeis Yosef ben Yehuda Ishreid of Yosef ben Yochanan Ishirushalayim. From when they died, Bachlo Eshkoles Isha Akolba. Same idea as we saw before. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kala Eshkoles She'amdu Lahen Yisrael, Miyemeis Moshe Ad Shemeis Yosef ben Yehuda. All of these eshkolas from the very beginning until this point, hayu lemeidim Torah kamoshe Rabbeinu. They learned Torah like Moshe Rabbeinu. Mikan ve'elich, from then onwards, loy hayu lemeidim Torah kamoshe Rabbeinu. What's going on? Up until this point in history, they learned Torah like Moshe Rabbeinu. But from this point, they didn't learn Torah like Moshe Rabbeinu. What did they do that was different? Well, they're learning this way, learning not that way, etc. Moshe Rabbeinu was living 1,000 years before this. Questioning, they always did. Look at Moshe Rabbeinu's life. It was full of debate and questions. And Korach's questioning, other people. Writing it down, they weren't writing anything down yet. This is years before the Mishnah. Years before the Gemara. Something is changing. And it's very hard to get our fingers on exactly what is changing. And what I think is changing is this idea of good machlokas turning to bad machlokas. Meaning, there's different types of machlokas. There's good machlokas, which is built into the system, which is where people disagree with each other because they just see things differently. There's nothing wrong with that.
What's bad?
But then there's bad machlokas, which is where either because we're just unable to resolve our differences for external reasons, meaning we can disagree with each other, but there has to be a way ultimately of coming to an answer. When there's no way of coming to an answer, then that just breeds uncertainty and unhappiness. And also when we're disagreeing with each other because we're no longer on the same wavelength. Meaning, to some degree, human beings will always disagree with each other. We'll talk about that more next time. Philosophically, we love that. We like the idea that there's machlokas. We like the idea that I see things differently. The Gemara expresses this. We'll see the source next time in the following way. When you see 600,000 Jews together, you make a brocha. What brocha do you make? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Chacham HaRazim, the wise knower of all secrets. We praise God that He knows all secrets. What does that mean, Chacham HaRazim? So the Gemara in Baruch says that we say, look, the following, just like each one of these 600,000 people has a different face, no two people have the same face, so too they have a different opinion. And we love that. We love that. Just like Itaya comes into my class, I don't expect her to take my face when she walks into the room, which is good for her, really. So too, I don't expect her to take my opinion. I love the fact that Esther has a different opinion to me. That's good machlokas. But there comes a point when the opinions diverge, not just because we see things differently, but because we're just our whole mindset is different. Different mindsets become to be not just machlokas, but sinas chinam. Sinas chinam, which we'll talk a bit more about as we go through, what is sinas chinam? It's not hatred for no reason. No one hates anyone for no reason. It's when the hatred goes from a difference of ideas to a rejection of individuals, because we become camps, we become different communities, and we begin to actually fight on that level. That's what Sinas Chinam is. And something's happening at the end, from this point of the Second Temple onwards, where the Machlokas, which was originally positive and praiseworthy, is becoming negative. And there are two real reasons why it's becoming negative. The first reason, which we'll see right now, is that the Sanhedrin ceased to have proper function. Now, we've looked at this a little bit in the context of, Los Osso. But now let's look at it in terms of Machlokas. Have a look over on page 2 at the source number 6. Yosef ben Yehuda Oimer Shaloi Lismoch. This is a very famous Gemara. It's a Gemara about Smicha. When you bring a Korban Yachid, a private Korban, you have to do Smicha. Smicha is where you put your hands on the Korban, and you basically transfer whatever your individual mindset is to the korban. Meaning what? If you're bringing a korban for a happy reason, such as you want to say thank you for getting well after an illness, or you want to do something innate happens to you, or you just feel very connected to God, so you want to bring a korban. So what do you do when you put your hands on the animal? What are you transferring? What do you say? Happiness. How do you transfer happiness to your korban? You sing Shira. You sing Shira over the korban. Meaning, the korban's going up to God, as it were. You want to transfer, it says, Ke'ilu, you're offering yourself up to God, so you're transferring into the korban all the positivity that you're feeling. If you bring a korban for a negative reason, such as Chet, you did an Issa Kares by mistake, what do you do when you put your hands on the korban? What do you say?
That should be me.
And therefore, what do you say? You say vidui. You do vidui onto the korban. Either way, you're putting something into the korban, and that korban is being offered up ke'ilu, it's you, either for good or because you feel that you deserve on some level to be offered up to God because you're not good. Either way, the korban is a substitute. Look at number 6. Therefore, the shaila is, what's on yontif? If I bring a korban in yontif, Do I do smicha or not? On the one hand, I need to do smicha on the korban because the korban needs smicha. On the other hand, it's yontif, the korban's muksa. How can I use an animal on yontif when it's muksa? I'm not allowed to. So it says like this. Number 6. Yosef ben Yehuda Oimer Shaloi Lismoch, Yosef ben Yochanan Oimer Lismoch. Okay, it's a machlokes. One of the zugos says yes, one of the zugos says no. Yeshua ben Prachya Oimer Shaloi Lismoch, and Itaya Bele Oimer Lismoch. So the next generation also, the next generation of zugos also had a machlokes. Yudah ben Tamar Oimer Shaloi Lismoch. Okay, sorry, Shimon ben Shatach Oimer Lismoch. Yeah, so Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach, they disagreed about whether to do it or not. That's the next generation down. Next, Shemaya Oimer Lismoch. Shemaya says, do smicha. Avtalion Oimer Lo Lismoch. So again, they can't, why are they keeping arguing about this? And why do I need to know every generation they're arguing and arguing and arguing and arguing? Yes?
I think that it's an argument and machloket that keeps Torah alive.
Good, so why are we learning this? Because this would apply to 1,000 different debates. Why is the Gemara focusing on this? Hillel u'Menachem loy nechlechu. Oh, Baruch Hashem. Finally, Hillel and Menachem. Who's Menachem?
Shammai.
Menachem. Who's Menachem? It's not Shammai. It's called Menachem, not Shammai. Hillel and Menachem were on the same wavelength. But then very enigmatically it says, Yatsa Menachem. Menachem left. Menachem's leaving is one of the very fascinating issues to what happened. This is, Menachem somehow left, he went off, we'll have a whole discussion about that another time. Maybe he became a heretic, maybe he became a Christian, maybe something happened to Menachem, not for now. It wasn't good, whatever it was. Shammai, I mean, this was pre-Christianity, so probably not Christian, but anyway, we'll see. Shammai came in, Nichnas Shammai. Shammai Oimer, Shelo Lismach. Shammai said not to do smicha. Hillel Oimer Lismach, and Hillel back with the old Machloikas. And the Gemara just says at the end, Harishonu Hainasim, the first people in this crowd were the Nasim, Vashnim Lahem Avoy Spacedin. Fine. But it's Rashi that says the most fascinating thing of all. And this is what I'm really trying to get at here. Number 7. Rashi says, Vazuhi Machloikas Rishonu Shehaita B'chachm Yisrael. This was the first ever Machloikas that the rabbis had. What on earth does Rashi mean? This was for sure not the first Machlokas. Open up the Chumash. It's full of Machlokas. Aaron and Moshe have a Machlokas in Parshas Shmini. Okay? Moshe and Korach have a major Machlokas. There's Machlokas all over the place. Why is he saying this, 1,000 years after Har Sinai, this is the first Machlokas that there ever was? That clearly can't be. What does Rashi mean? So what Rashi means is, this was the first Machlokas that for various reasons could not be resolved. It became almost institutionalized machlokas. You ended up, we'll see soon, with not just Hillel and Shammai, but Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, which becomes almost like a color war thing. The reds and the blues. Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. It becomes machanot, a dot.
We're all red now.
Well, we all became Beis Hillel. But what happens when the Jewish people, if you like, become divided to that point, is that machlokas is no longer soluble. And there are reasons for that which are technical, and the reasons for that which are more subtle. Have a look at the Rambam number 8. This is a very important Rambam just to understand how things work. Kishahaya Beis Din HaGadol Kain. When there was a Beis Din HaGadol, lo haisa machlokas b'Yisrael. Again, what does he mean there was no machlokas?
There was no machlokas
in. Right, meaning, the machlokas that I talked about before, where I see what things one way, use things another way, that's good machlokas, that was always there. That we always have. So what did he do? Alakodin Shinola Basophic Echabus. He goes through the whole thing. If you had a machlokas, where did you go? So you read this Rambam, what does he say? I'm not gonna read the whole thing. What did you do? If you went, so where did you start? You went to the lowest, and it wasn't an appeal system like the modern day courts. In the modern day courts you go to the court gives a ruling. If you don't like it, then you go to the next court. Here, it wasn't if you don't like it. If you don't like the basis of the decision, well tough. The basis of the decision is upset, it's binding. But if they didn't know how to give a sacrifice, if they didn't know the answer to the question, they said, we don't know, so they go to the next level, the next level, the next level, the next level, and there was a Beis Din of 23, and there was another Beis Din of 23, and eventually you got to the Sanhedrin HaGadol. You got to the Beis Din HaGadol of 71, on Harabais, in the Lishkos HaGazis, and how did they decide?
Majority rules.
And therefore, if there was a vote, and the majority gave a vote, that's a psak. So, finished. Therefore, there is no ongoing machlokas. Think about it, guys. When you read the pages of the Gemara, when you read the Mishnah, you don't see arguing people that lived before the generations of Yosef ben Uez and Yosef ben Yochanan. You don't see that. You hardly even see them. It's almost always people afterwards, after the Churban. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, etc. Why don't I find when I open the Gemara, I don't know, David HaMelech says this, but Shlomo HaMelech said that. Why don't I find a machlokes in halacha between people that lived at the Yeshaya Hanavi says this, but you know the neighbor of the Yeshaya Hanavi said the other. I mean, why don't I find that? I only find people from later on. So one of the main reasons is because the people that came earlier, there was no machlokes to record, so they had their machlokes for all the right reasons, and they went to the Beis Din HaGadol, and that's it. Zach. Says the Rambam at the end, Mishebatul Beis Din HaGadol. From when the Beis Din HaGadol ended, it was Mevatel, they cancelled it, we'll see why in a minute, Rav's the Machlokas Yisrael. So that's the first reason why Machlokas rapidly increased at this point of history. There was no Beis Din HaGadol. Zeh Matame V'noisim Tam Lezvarov, V'zeh Matare V'noisim Tam Lezvarov, Zeh Oise, Zeh Matir, and now you have opinions. You know, Rabbi X says this, Rabbi Y says that, and we now need a new way to resolve them. We can no longer resolve them through a Beis Din HaGadol. How in the end are we going to resolve them? How are we going to get to Apsak when now we have different opinions and no way to actually decide between them? What do we do in the end? What did you say? Yeah, but how does he decide? We had a Beis Din HaGadol, that was the way to decide. Now we don't have one, so how are we going to decide?
They make a din for themselves.
Who makes a din for themselves? Rabbi Akiva says? What Masorah? They disagree with each other now. Which majority of all the rabbis in the world?
No, you had look back at the Gemara.
They didn't have a Gemara.
There is a psak.
How do you make a psak? Because when there was a Beis Din HaGadol, then you can decide. Now there's no way to decide. You see the problem? You see the problem? You're living at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. There is no way to move forward because there's no Beis Din HaGadol, or not one that works. This is why, ladies, the Talmud was written. This was the purpose of the Gemara. The Gemara was put together to deal with exactly this question. We now need a new system that will analyze these opinions and come to a pseck of these opinions.
But then
there was the beginning of what we now call the process of Mishnah and Gemara. And at the end of the day, if you lived in Rabbi Akiva's community, you follow Rabbi Akiva. If you lived in Rabbi Lezer's community, you follow Rabbi Lezer. I mean, on a communal level, I say, like a rav, you don't have a problem as an individual because you don't need to go to 15 rabbis. You go to one rabbi, he gives you a pseck. But on a national level, it's not good enough. That's why we put together the Talmud. Now, if you want to know the beginnings of the question as to why the Gemara was written, why the Talmud was prepared, it was because it was there to replace the Beis Din HaGadol Yerushalayim, which no longer was existent. And number 9 and 10, which I'm not going to go into great detail, number 9 and 10 deals with the Ramban, which we saw before, where he says that it's not just when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Many people say this. Ask people, when did the Sanhedrin cease? When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Well, there's two reasons why that's wrong. Number one, we had a Sanhedrin well long after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The Sanhedrin was only finally, remember, he went to Yavne and then Usha and Tiberia and all those places. The Beis HaMikdash was ultimately only disbanded under the Romans in around the 5th century. But on the other hand, even when the Beis HaMikdash was there, we didn't have a real Sanhedrin anymore. Right. Well, when did the Sanhedrin cease to function? This is very important. Look at number 9 for a second. Arba'im Shana at Shiloi Charav Abayis, 40 years already before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Gal Salah Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin put itself into self-imposed exile. The Yashvala B'Chanuyot, and it went down to sit in the Chanuyot. What are the Chanuyot?
Stores.
The stores. It went down into downtown Yerushalayim, off Har Habayis, and it repositioned itself. L'mayir, so what was the Nafkamina? Shiloi Dona did Nefoshes. There were things they couldn't do anymore. And not just in Nefoshes, but the Ramban in number 10 says they just weren't a Sanhedrin anymore. Now this wasn't a sudden thing, guys. This had been happening over hundreds of years. That gradually, the Sanhedrin begins to pull itself apart until eventually they came to a point when it actually said, you know something, we can no longer function anymore. We're going to have something called a Sanhedrin, but it's not really a Sanhedrin anymore. If you remember, this was the point in history, in Jewish history, where the Purushim and the Tzedukim were beginning to be the most, you know, fierce fighting with each other, and the Sanhedrin was part of the battleground, if you like. Remember, there was a civil war also. Look at the appendix for a second. I want to show you a very fascinating historical thing here. If you remember the Hashmonaim, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren of the Hashmonaim, ended up in a major civil war with each other, okay?
It's all good.
Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, who are fighting each other. Is that what you guessed? You guessed who they were? Okay, Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, who were the great-grandchildren of the original Hashmonaim, you end up with a civil war. You end up with a civil war which is mamash Jew killing Jew. It's not Jew killing Greek or Jew killing Roman. It's Jew killing Jew. The Romans only came in because the Hyrcanus, I believe it was, invited the Romans in to help him to win his side of the civil war, which is very nice. Of course, he won the civil war, but then, of course, once the Romans are there, they don't leave. Once you invite them in, then they're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to say, well, thank you very much, we've finished with you now, now you can go back to Italy. That's not how it works. The Romans come to town, the Romans stay in town. So you have a period of Jewish history which is unbelievably, if you like, pulled apart with machlokas. That has an impact on the Torah as well. Have a look at number 15. This is a very, if you want to learn something on Hanukkah, which is Greek oriented, this is something which is people, I think, also important to learn. Hayasham Achad Ish Leit. There was a guy living at the time of Yanai HaMelech. Yanai HaMelech is exactly the time of the Zugros. He's the contemporary of Shimon ben Shetach. There was a guy in Ish Leit. What's a Leit? It's a clown in modern Hebrew, but it doesn't mean... A late in modern Hebrew is like a happy clown with a big red nose. Yeah, late is a guy with a bad attitude. Okay, a mocker, scoffer, scoffers.
Okay.
A late in modern Hebrew is a clown. A late stan. Yeah, but it's not like... A late in really means like a bad guy. Ra. evil guy, Levra, bad attitude, Belial, good for nothing. Ve'elazar ben Poriya shmo, it's called Elazar ben Poriya. What happened? Ve'yom Elazar ben Poriya le'yana ha'melech, so he winds up the king, he says, Yana ha'melech, libam shel perushim alecha. The Pharisees are against you. Who are the Pharisees? Perushim. Right, these are what we call Chazal. Okay, the Purushim. This was already a group by this point called the Purushim. Why were they called Porush? What were they Porush from? What does Purushim literally mean? Separate. Separate from what? The rest of who? This was a time where there were lots of different sects within the Jewish people. Sadducees, Pharisees, Essenes, the Dead Sea Scroll guys. Yeah?
They had a light and dark.
The people, yeah, the children of light, the children of darkness, and all this. You have to get put this in context. Well, I'll give you a class on this for the end of the second phase of the Mikdash, just after. The Tzedukim were very not that focused on Tumah and Tahara. The Tzedukim said the Tumah and Tahara applies in the base of Mikdash, but not really outside. The Purushim, our guys, the Chazal Pharisees, they were Porush even outside the base of Mikdash. They said Tumah and Tahara applies outside the base of Mikdash. The Essenes went to the other extreme and were completely nuts about Tumah and Tahara. Exactly, they were completely almost disconnected from normal human life in every way. Whether the Dead Sea Scroll people were the same as the Essenes is a good shaila, but the Purushim were the people who were fighting at this stage.
So they just never multiplied themselves.
That's why
they died in
like 5 years. Yeah. So let's have a look. Ma'aseh says, Yama Melech, what should I do? Yama Melech is taking advice from this evil advice. He says, what should I do? Hakem lehem batzitz shebein enech. It says, wear the tzitz. Why is he going to wear the tzitz? He's a kohen. Because they're chashmonaim. One of the problems with the chashmonaim is, even though they were kohenim, they should have handed over the malchus to which shevet? Yehuda. And they didn't. Hakem lehem batzitz shebein enech. So he went out wearing the tzitz. Hayasham zakin echad. There was one zakin there, the Yehuda ben Gedidya Shemai. Gedidya, where is Yehuda ben Gedidya? Was his name? V'yomer Yehuda ben Gedidya le'Yana HaMelech. He said, Yana HaMelech, King Yanai. Rav lecha kete malchus. Is it not good enough for you that you're the king? Hanach kete kohuna le'zara shal Aaron. Leave the kohuna for people who are real kohanim. Now, it's not a very diplomatic thing to say to the king, says the Gemara Shehaya Omer, because there was a rumor around. People said, Imoy nishbeis v'modiyin. His mother had been captured in Modiyin, okay, and she'd been raped. And then he was a product of an illicit marriage, as it were, illicit union, and he was not a real Kohen. His mother was a Chalala, well, he's not a real Kohen. And he was never corroborated. So what did he do? So the rabbis made this stand. The Yibdulu Chachmi Israel Bazam, and the rabbis departed from Yanai in great anger. The Yom Elazar ben Poriya Le'ana Melech, and this is where it spills over to Torah. See this cross over here. So the Elazar ben Poriya said to Yanai Melech, Yanai Melech, Hedyot shev Yisrael kachu dinoi. If someone is a hedyot, someone is a normal person, maybe you can treat them that way. Ata melech v'kohen gadol. You're the melech and you're the kohen gadol. He's winding him up. Kachu dincha, that's how they treat you. So he says again, ma'aseh, so what can I do? So im ata shomei ala atasi. If you want to hear my opinion, he says, roim sam, destroy them. Wipe them out. Wipe them out. So says Yana melech v'toyra ma'aseh hei aleha. So what's going to be with the Torah? Wipe out the rabbis, what's going to be the Torah? So he answers, Harry Kruchel Benachas Bekeren Zav, it's wound up and sitting in the corner. What's he talking about? What's wound up and sitting in the corner?
The Sefer Torah.
Kala Roti Lilmod, Yavo Yilmod. Anyone who wants to go and look, read, can read. Meaning, Torah Shebichtav is all you need. What are you worried about the rabbis for? Says the Gemara, there must have been an element of heresy, of apikorsis that entered Yanai Melech. Why? The Havalei Lameima, because what should he have answered? Tinach Terush Bichtav, I understand Terush Bichtav, Terush Baal Peh Mai. He should have said, well, that's fine, but Terush Bichtav is not everything. What's with Terush Baal Peh? So he didn't answer that. And in fact, what they did is they wiped out the rabbis. Miyad v'tutza tara. Agidei Elazar ben Poriya. This evil spread through this guy, this evil Nazi guy, spread the negativity. The Yargu kol Chachmei Yisrael, and there was a general slaughter of the rabbis. The Hayah Ha'olam Mishtomem, the world was almost desolate of Torah. And Shibah Shimon ben Shetach v'Hekseh Zatera Yoshna. Until the next door, Shimon ben Shetach begins to pull it back again. How does he pull it back again? So, interesting, Shimon ben Shetach had a ripotexia. Who was Shimon ben Shetach? Who was his sister? The king's wife, and her name was Her name was? Famous woman.
Mrs. King.
Mrs. Yanai HaMelech was called?
Queen.
Give you a clue. If you go down into town, into the...
Shlokyanamalka.
Exactly. How did you get it?
Because if you go into town...
Because you go into town, you go to Rechov Shimon Ben Shetach, you'll see Rechov Shimon Ben Shetach. Fine. So if you look at number 16. Yanai Malka, okay? Umacha Tikrichai, the Yanai HaMelech and the Queen were Kricha Rifta Bahadi Hadadi, were breaking bread together. They were eating together. Umidekatul, who were about, because he killed out all the rabbis, there were no rabbis left. Loi Havalei Inish Levorchilo, there was no one to bench. No one knew how to bench. They were all secular, all Chilonim. They were all completely secular Jews. And no one knew how to do anything. So there was
no religious Jews
in the court. Yeah, in the court, they'd got rid of everybody. There was nobody involved in the king's life in the courts of the land. It was all Sadducees and people who they were not interested in benching. Amalola Dubitu, he said to his wife, Man Yamile Gavra de Mabarakalam, can we find someone that can bench for us? Interestingly, what does that have to say about Yanai HaMelech? He's like a reluctant apikoros. On some level. He says, can we find someone to bench? So Amalei, she said to him, Ishtabili, promise me, if I find you a guy, the loy mataras, you won't kill him, you won't start up with him. So Ishtabala, so he promised her, I won't start with him. So he brings in her brother, Shimon ben Shetach. For he comes back into the court and he benches for them, etc. In other words, there's a return to somewhat of religious life into the court. But what you're beginning to see, the reason I brought you just these little midrashic historical vignettes, and again, I have no reason to believe that these are midrashim which are not recording historical issues that were going on. Maybe not exactly in this form, but they are representing something that was going on in the second Beit HaMikdash, which was a breakup of society. The machlokas, which was spilling out from the political world into the Jewish world and affecting Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's what I want to get across to you, that Torah Shebaal Peh didn't exist in a vacuum. It existed in a context. And the context at this point in Jewish history was a world that was torn apart, if you like, by this violence. And the machlokas, the bad machlokas, begins to seep in. So, now, let's go back. One reason why there's bad machlokas is because there's no Sanhedrin. There's no Sanhedrin because it's all falling apart and therefore there's no one to answer the questions. That's why the Rambam says the machlokas increase in the Jewish people. There is another reason for bad machlokas. Have a look, please, for a second over at page number 12. Source number 12. Let's look at these last three sources and make sure you understand what's going on. It's a little bit more subtle. Yes.
In the general people on Israel, there were religious Jews, but you're just talking about...
Oh, sure they were religious groups. Historically, the Purushim, the Pharisees, were supported by the Amcha, the people down, the basic, lower classes, working classes. There were such people. But the court, the higher up the social scale you went, the less of they were Purushim, and therefore the more they were Tzedukim, until the Kahuna was infiltrated by Tzedukim, and the king's palace was infiltrated by Tzedukim, and of course eventually the Chashmonaim were wiped out. The Gemara says anyone who tells you they're descending from the Chashmonaim is lying, because there are no living descendants of the Chashmonaim left. All that was left was King Herod. King Herod was of course not one of the Chashmonaim. He was not even Jewish, necessarily. He was the son of a questionable convert. And he was put there by the Romans to replace the Chashmonaim. He married the last princess of the Chashmonaim, who was called... God, Hannah, you're on a roll today. What was Herod's wife called?
Mariamne?
Yes, Mariamne.
Okay.
And he killed her. He killed her because he was paranoid. Where are all these stories? In the history books, Josephus talks about them, and also in the Gemara as well. What's that? He was paranoid that the Jews were out to get him. Ladies, he was paranoid because he knew that he was a false, if you like, Chashmonai. He wasn't really from the royal family. He was put there as a Roman stooge. Do you know what I mean? And he was therefore constantly paranoid that people were trying to get him. And people were trying to get him. You know, what Woody Allen says, just because I'm paranoid, it doesn't mean people aren't out to get me. But and it's true, on a certain level he was also paranoid, but he was also, people were out to get him. Okay, so he ended up killing his wife. He killed most of his family as well. He killed his sons as well. And therefore there were no Chashmonaim left over. you can go through Josephus and look. He killed his wife and he pickled her in honey. He pickled
what?
Her body. He pickled her dead body.
Did
so because he felt guilty and he wanted to have her in the palace and all that kind of stuff. The guy was obviously not entirely, you know.
What did he drown her and then put her in London?
Why did he feel so normal?
He didn't drown her. He killed her. Now, ladies, I want you to see one other thing which is very important, and we'll explain this. We'll fit this into the system. Look at number 12, please. Tanya, I'm a Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi also addresses this issue of machlokas, but he gives another reason. And I want to bring this reason as well as the second reason for bad machlokas. In other words, there's good machlokas, which is the disagreement between people because they see things differently. And there's bad machlokas, A, because the Sanhedrin is not there, but also for a second reason as well. Have a look at number 12. Tanya, I'm a Rabbi Yossi. Mitchilaloi hayu marbe machlokas bi Israel. Originally, there was no machlokas in Israel, says the Gemara Sanhedrin. Ela based in Shel Shivim ve'echad Yoshim ve'lishkas Agazes. But there was a based in Yerushalayim that sat and that dealt with the machlokas. Look at the very end. Mishirabu Talmidi Shammai ve'Hillel. The Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel came along. Sheloi shimshu kol tarachan. Ah, something new. They didn't do proper shimush. What's shimush? Following, learning, meaning. In order to train to be a true Talmud Chacham, you have to not only know Chumash, but and also Teresh Shabbal Peh, but you also need to do Shimush Rabbonim. Meaning you have to be part of a Masorah. What does literally Shimush mean? The Shemesh. To serve. You have to serve. You have to be an apprentice.
Isn't it anoint?
No. That's with Shemen Amishchal. That's as in Mashuch, maybe Mashiach. So he says like this. From when Hillel and Shammai, says the Gemara, came, Shaloi Shimshu Kol Tzarka, they didn't do proper Shimush, Rabu Machlokis be Israel. Oh, that caused Machlokis to increase. The Nasi Tatayu Kishtei Torahs. And the Torah became like two Torahs. Now, according to this, what's the reason for Machlokis? Shani, what's the reason for Machlokis? According to this, what's the reason for Machlokis? Is it because of the Sanhedrin Agadol? No, what is it? Because they didn't do Shimush. Why didn't they do Shimush?
They didn't know how.
They didn't know how? They Hillel and didn't know how. They were too lazy?
They
were distracted. That's the point. Oh, by who? Have a look in number 14 and we'll finish with the politics. You have to understand how this works in today's world as well. Meaning, we live in a world today which is political. But that's nothing new about us. We always live in a political world, and the question is, to what extent does the political issue spill over into the Torah issues? Let me raise a contemporary issue. Is it appropriate, is it inappropriate to go to Har HaBayis today?
According to religion,
it depends on whether or not you're a boy or a girl. It depends on if you're a girl who's married. It depends on...
Now, Hannah, you're being very halachic about it, which is very nice. And there indeed is a whole halachic sugya about Tumah and Tara and Mikveh and... There's a big debate even whether unmarried women can go. It depends on whether you hold that unmarried women are allowed to use the mikveh for any reason, etc.
Politically, the world is, but they're going around, and they're going down their stupid stones, they're getting the law.
Oh.
Politically, the law says that they're going around.
Oh, so there clearly is a political issue going on here. To deny that there's any political issue is just to live in, you know,
a bubble.
On the other hand, there's also a halachic issue going on here. So is there an interface between the political issue and the halachic issue?
Yeah.
And the answer is clearly there is. And the political issue is interfaced with the halacha in the realm of hashkofa and metahalacha. Remember what I drew on the board for you? Halacha, metahalacha, hashkofa. Meaning, the rabbis who are saying, under no circumstances are you allowed to go onto Har HaBayit, which has a good halachic underpinning to it as a psak, are clearly coming from a certain hashkafic position that there is no reason for us to be on Har HaBayit. Because why? Because the Beit HaMikdash will ultimately come down from Shemayim, and the political struggle with the Arabs has got nothing to do with the idea of Geula. Whereas the rabbis who are paskening based on good psak and good halachic reasoning and lots of makoras that you are allowed to go on certain parts of Har HaBayit, are clearly coming from a bigger hashgafic position that going on to Har HaBayit today is part of the mitzvah of Kibush HaAretz, which is part of the mitzvah of Reishit Smicha Gulotenu, because the Beis HaMikdash has to be built by us and will not come down from Shemaim waiting for some miracle to happen. In other words, underpinning the halachic debate, there is a deeper hashgafic debate, and politics comes into that as well. And I don't think we should be scared of that. That's very important. In America, you're brought up to think very strongly that politics and religion have no interface. And that's almost like the cardinal rule of American Western life, that politics and religion don't mix. And the answer is, and it's seen as being almost like a negativity if they do. Someone's made a mistake. And the answer is, well, that's...
In God we trust. What do you mean?
Well, that's a very interesting thing. You know, in God we trust, but everyone else pays cash. You know, it's not so straightforward. You know, in God we trust. That's still written on the dollar bills, but...
I know, but I'm just saying that. In the Pledge of Allegiance.
Right.
Actually, they took it out of the Pledge of Allegiance.
No, they didn't. They're not taking it out.
Ladies, I'd like to...
They have a Supreme Court case about it. They took it out.
They did not take it out.
Ladies, you can have a machlokes. Is this a machlokes of Shem Shemayim? Is this good machlokes or bad machlokes? Okay. Ladies, let's have a look at number 14. Let's look at number 14. Because I wanted to see the Rambam. Nadiv, are you still with us?
Yes.
Excellent. I want you to see the Rambam in number 14. And I want you to see how he puts this idea of Shimush into the issue of machlokes. Because you have to really plug that in as well. And he makes a very fundamental point, which is, it's not that they just didn't do Shimush, therefore they didn't know what they were doing. So pick up the Rambam in the second paragraph. Aval Amr Mishirabu Tamidin Hit Shama Vehilel Shaloi Shimshu Kotzachem. Rasa Machlokes Israel. This Gemara, which says that when Hillel and Shammai came along and they didn't do proper Shimush. Inyan Davazer Borom Oid. It's not that they didn't have a Masorah. It's not that they didn't pay careful attention. He already said in the first paragraph, if you think that the Machlokes comes because we have a confused Masorah, the people passed down things they didn't understand them, that's not correct. The reason there was Machlokes is as follows. Ki shnei anashim, I want you to look at this with me carefully, because this is very philosophically important. Shnei anashim sheheim shavim b'havana ubi'iyun. Two people who are on the same wavelength and who learn the same will be yedias hakalim, understand the general principles in the same way. Shalom dimehen, okay, and they're learning from them. Loitehi b'nehem machloikas. There's not going to be that much machloikas. How can there be? We're all coming from the same place. Of course, we see things differently. We understand that, and we appreciate that, and we make a bracha on that. But at the end of the day, if we're thinking straight, we're all coming off the same text, we're all coming off the same rules of interpretation of the text, how much machlokes is there going to be from one extreme to another? The mashin line about achas amidus b'shumpan. The in tia, and when there is machlokes, which is good machlokes, which is fine, tia mortis, it's not going to be that widespread. Ben Shammai v'Hillel, because Shammai and Hillel themselves hardly had any machlokes. Only a few things, 5-6 things, Shammai and Hillel actually disagreed on. The fishidachi limudam b'chol ma shehayu loim, because their way of learning is ba'achas amidus hayu krovim zeh lazeh, which was very similar, because they're coming off the same page. The gam haklalim anachonim shehayu etzel zeh etzel hayu etzel sheni, they were working off the same principles. Now, and here's the key. But their students learned less. The nechleshu, okay, etzlam darche hadin, and they were weaker. The hashva al shamay compared to Shammai and Hillel, rabbis say in their rabbis, nechle machlokes beinehem. The shasa masa v'masan. They were no longer working exactly off the same page. Lefishekol echad mehem dan lefikosh sichloi lebeaklalim hayudun lo, because each one went according to his own seichel. The ein lashima mekachem. We can't blame them for that. Meaning, what we ended up with Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is a generation that was weaker, not just because perhaps they were intrinsically weaker, because it's not just the automatic Yeridus Hadoris. We saw from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yosef Ben Yoezer, they learned the same way like Moshe Rabbeinu. So even though they were ongoing generations, they weren't going down in the same way. But at a certain point they started going down. Why? Because we've seen that society is falling apart. You have a civil war. You have major machloikas between the Prushim and the Tzedukim, etc., etc. And Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are living right in the thick of that machloikas, and it can't help but have an effect on the way they learn Torah. It can't help but do that. And says the Rambam, it's bad machloikas, but it's not their fault. They can't help but be themselves. Yiftach b'dorah k'shmul b'dorah. Your leader in your generation is the right leader for you, even if he's weaker than the previous leader. They have to be the people in their own generation. I can't live in anyone else's generation. But on a certain level, this is bad machloikis because he's coming out of an ambiance, an environment, which is of riv, of fighting, of, and this leads to all those things that Rashi said, shichacha, people not understanding things the right way, doifi, hypocrisy, and machloikis. And therefore, in summary, there are three types of machloikis that we've seen on the sheet. Three types, and I want you to understand them clearly. The good machlokas, the type which we want and we strive for, is differences of opinion. We make a bracha on it, we love it, we think that people should see things differently, and we'll talk philosophically about why that works. What does God think? You know, do we know what God thinks? Do we care what God thinks? That's a good philosophical question. But that's good machlokas. But we've seen two types of bad machlokas, some of which are inevitable. We just have to live with them and resolve them best we can. One of which is the Sanhedrin coming to an end, which just technically caused machlokas, because there was no one to answer the deal, the final word. And also the idea of the society as a whole descending into an environment of dispute, which had an effect on the Talmidim of the time, which meant that they just didn't have the clarity. Not because they forgot the Masorah, but because they just didn't think the same way anymore because of all the stuff going on around them. And that led to a number of machlokesim as well between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Unless you understand this in a historical and sociological context, you can't really know what's going on in Teresh Baal Peh as well. And therefore, I felt that was an important beginning point, if you like to understand machlokes. Next time on Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm going to get a little bit more philosophical and we'll deal with the philosophical issues. Okay.